Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's the coward, Bob Mackowitz. Bob, what is it about this weather that you don't think you could delightfully bike over to my place?
Let me count the ways. Is it the torrential rain?
Maybe.
Is it the omnipresent threat of hail, since we seem to be living in an Armageddon? Is it the bitter wind that I would be riding into that would hold me nearly to a standstill, no matter how hard I pedaled?
And also, don't forget, cars drive even safer when there's tons of rain hurting their view.
I have to say, and I don't know if this is a function of age or the city is changing, or it's probably a lot of things altogether, but I don't like riding downtown on my bike as much as I used to. I don't drive, you may have heard. And so I've gotten everywhere on my bike, and I'm pretty good on my bike, as you'd expect, because it's, you know, that's how I get around. But just over the last 5 to 10 years, I've noticed that downtown is way more precarious for cyclists than it ever was while I was going to school or through my 30s. It's just become, it's almost like a video game. Like, you know those movies where you get sucked into a video game, and if you die in the game, you die in real life?
I think there's more of everything. There's more cars, there's more pedestrians, there's more bikes, and there's more construction, which funnels everything.
Actually, there's one thing that there isn't more of, and that's space.
Yes.
So all those things are true, but it's the same size road that it's always been. So, you know, I love, geez, back in the day, I used to love when I would cycle over to your place and we'd drive in together. It was such a great way for my brain to wake up in the morning. It was about a good 25-minute ride. There was almost no traffic because I'd come meet you at like, you know, 6:30 or whatever it was that we prearranged. So the streets were pretty empty, and it was just such a beautiful way to connect to the day and the city. And I'd often be working out ideas in my head for the show. And then when we plopped down together in the car, our day was off and running because you were always Susie Sunshine first thing in the morning. So honestly, I never saw you grumpy.
Rarely, very rarely.
And it had to have been a hell of a fun night the night before.
fair point.
You know, I wouldn't even say you're grumpy. You just get, you know what you do when you're, when you don't feel good in the mornings, like this is cause? You don't talk.
That's true.
I always know something's up when you're not chatty.
It's why if I am hungover, I like to be alone. And not because of any physical ailment or not because I look a wreck or I'm throwing up. I want silence. And more than that, I don't want to answer questions. Because every question better be sharp and precise. Otherwise, I'm going to be like, why are you asking me this?
You're the most polite person I know. And sometimes I think you talk to people just because you think it's rude not to.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely quality. So I know you must be close to death if you're too tired to chat.
It's a tell. It's absolutely a poker tell. Because, Bob, I'm the guy in an elevator. If it stops before the ground floor, I'll always take out an earbud to at least invite the possibility of conversation.
So funny. I kind of, you know, one thing I'm going to miss about COVID is those face shields. I wish I could have gotten one that was tinted. That would be like my perfect way to walk around. It's like with a tinted COVID face shield. The cup.
Yeah,
the season is done.
And season's done.
1-0, hell of a game. Well, I guess, if it's that close and the stakes are that high, it doesn't matter how many events there are. It's just a hell of a game. But any thoughts on the conclusion of the exciting, not-so-exciting series?
Not exciting at all. I both these things are true. Tampa deserves to be praised. You win two cups in 282 days, you done something right. Montreal coming back from 3-1 against the Leafs, going 11-4, and they were the better team against Winnipeg and Vegas. But The finals had a sense of inevitability. The only thing I'm going to remember on the ice is Blake Coleman scoring that Superman goal to make it 2-1 at the end of the second period in game two. Beyond that, I don't have too many memories of what we saw on the ice. I mean, Bob, the most exciting thing from last night is Barclay Goodrow blocking shots.
It wasn't a great series. It was a great performance. And I think that's what you mean when you say both these things are true. If you love hockey, you have to admire watching it played at that high a level. But it doesn't lend to great games unless the opposition is pretty much as good. And then it lends to epics. I always think about boxing, how there are some fights in a champion's career where you go, you know what? That proves how great they are because they dispatched of a good contender quite easily. And it lends itself to the legacy. But it's not a fun fight to watch. And then there are those where the champ is tested. And those are the ones you never forget. We clearly didn't have that last night. We clearly didn't have that last year with Dallas. Is Tampa that much better than everybody? I think it's a...
I think they are, Bob.
Yeah, I think they are, but I also think they didn't have to play anybody who really could have pushed them.
Yes. Yeah, I think they are. They never lost two in a row. They only lost one game by more than one goal. I think they are clearly the best team over the last 2 years, but you're right. In the end, this was like, you know, Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader wasn't around, so it's his brother Steve. And Steve's pretty mean as well. And Steve's got the voice down. It's not the same.
So substitute villain.
Yeah.
Substitute villain Steve Vader.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Now, in fairness to the New York Islanders, they did push them to seven. And when I said they weren't tested, I meant in those specific cup finals where they won two. It's just I went through the lineup today just to see how the scoring ended up. Kucherov's incredible.
Yep.
Just seeing the fact that people were wondering what kind of shape is he going to be in for the final doesn't feel that relevant now.
Nope.
But really, they just had such good balance. This is such a stupid thing to say, but how else do you put it? They have so many good players.
Yeah, that's it. In the end, it's like, whoa, they got that guy, and that guy. And Montreal either has older, heady veterans, Carey Price, or young guys that could grow in to become really good players.
But it's just not the same thing. Isn't it funny? You mentioned Montreal and Brendan Gallagher after the game is like despondent and he doesn't believe in moral victories, but how can you not if you're the Habs? You know, Vasilevsky intimating that, you know, their real cup final was the, you know, the third round where they beat Vegas. If Montreal didn't make the playoffs next year, would you be surprised?
Absolutely not.
Me neither. And especially if they go back to a normal format with normal conferences and divisions and, if the Habs had to fight their way through the Atlantic, you know, the way everybody else does, as good as the Atlantic is becoming, I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't make the playoffs.
No. Now, the other side for the Montreal fans out there is here's what you can be excited about. You know, Kotkaniemi had a lot of great moments. He was a healthy scratch, but a lot of great moments. The potential is there. Same thing with Cole Caulfield. Same thing with Nick Suzuki. So there is plenty of storylines, if you're a Montreal fan, that you can grab onto and say, what we saw, there's things that can translate to next year. There's also the fact, in a normal year, they don't make the playoffs. So, wherever you want to fall.
And the fact that going into next year, like going into this year, after the signing of Jake Allen, Carey Price's future seemed tenuous. People had a lot of questions about, what's this guy's future look like, and is that contract going to be a burden moving forward? And at least, you know, watching Price go through this year, Price is Price, that, you know, whatever team you put around him, he's going to make them better.
Yep.
So there's that. You know, I'm always about what's this got to do with the Leafs, and I think after watching that final, it just reminds us of what we're always reminded of in the playoffs, that if you don't have the goaltending, you don't have a shot. And what this has to do with the Leafs is it double confirms in my mind. I feel like I want to own this narrative, Matt, because not enough people are talking about it. I don't
it's
know
yours,
why.
Babe. It's yours, baby.
I don't know why people are so convinced that Jack Campbell's ready to win a cup.
Bob, they're not. But he makes $1.6 million next year. That's why we're excited about him. Not because we think he's elite, but because we're in a COVID-inspired flat salary cap where all the money is tied up and blah, 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 blah. We love Campbell because of his price tag and because he was good last year. He was legitimately good. He wasn't great, but he was good, and he's cheap.
I can't think of another position in the major sports in North America that is as fucked up as goalie. You don't draft them high because it takes so long to develop, and it's such a crapshoot at 18 or 19 who you're getting. So you don't, it's not like a quarterback where, or a pitcher in the college draft where if you look at that potential, you gotta have it. That just doesn't happen with goaltending. And yet the amount of impact that a goalie has in winning a playoff series is so disproportionate with the amount of focus that they get in terms of development and scouting. It's almost like this effing black hole mystery that just floats around and you just hope you get it right, but nobody ever really knows. And I can't think of anything else in sports that's like that.
You're right. And by the way, for people listening, yes, Vasilevsky, I think he was like a top five pick, but go back and look at all these Stanley Cup champs, and, you know, a lot of times the goalie is not a first rounder, and you're right. Goalies rarely go high, and when they go super high, we're like, oh, wow, they took a goalie really high. You're right, Bob.
I asked a GM once, and they said, I will not be around to watch this goalie do well for us, because it takes a long time for goalies to get good. It's almost counterintuitive. You know, there are stories of goalies who catch a heater like Carter Hart. Is Carter Hart going to be the next great goalie? I don't know. Nobody knows. You know, Braden Holtby was the best goalie, and then he wasn't. Like, it's just, there's no rhyme or effing reason. That's one of the things I find kind of exciting about Robin Lehner, is I feel if they were to make a deal for him, and I do think it would be dear, at least you're buying something that resembles consistency. And giving him that position to in with the Leafs to run with, I would feel confidence.
Bob.
Go ahead.
You know who Jack Campbell is?
Nope.
He's Taco Bell when you're drunk. It's cheap. It's good enough. And you're excited because it's not going to cost you much money. And it's going to satiate you in that moment of drunkenness. That's Jack Campbell.
That's a really great, surprising analogy. I like that. And yet, I would say Robin Lehner then becomes Swiss Chalet, where if you're kind of hungry and you don't want anything fancy, it's good. But it can also pass as Sunday dinner. And if winning the cup is Sunday dinner, you can't win with Taco Bell.
No, you cannot win with Taco Bell. You're right. The versatility of Swiss Chalet.
I eat it a lot. You know, it's... this is a continuation. When I was a kid growing up, whenever you had Swiss Chalet, was like for a special occasion, like somebody graduated or it was someone's 50th birthday. Like Swiss Chalet was basically this. We didn't go to the Mandarin, but I think the Mandarin has also become this. When everybody gets together and says, we're not going to spend a lot of money, but we're not going to spend nothing either.
Yes. No, Bob, 100%. That is Swiss Chalet. It's in that middle. It's high-end fast food, but you don't mistake it for the place with the really nice, you know, the really nice serviettes. And also, I can't wait to go back.
Swiss Chalet still has plastic forks.
Yeah.
Which is a bad idea, but kind of where they're at. When I first met Landsberg, I didn't know what Pusateri's was. And they would get Pusateri's for dinner, like for those fancy dinners. And that stuff's good.
Oh, yeah. It's expensive. It's very expensive.
Not cheap, but you get what you pay for.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So
Vasilevsky is Pusateri's.
Yes. Yes. Vasilevsky is Pusateri's. Robin Lehner is Swiss Chalet. Jack Campbell is Taco Bell when you're drunk. But when you're drunk.
Oh, Cause, this might be the peak Macko and Cause conversation.
Oh, and that means like Who was the bad backup goalie we had before? Like Curtis McElhaney? Not Curtis McElhaney.
Oh, you mean Michael Hutchinson?
Yeah. Michael Hutchinson is Taco Bell when you're sober. It's like, that's what the hell am I doing?
When you're drunk and you have Taco Bell, I haven't done this in a long time because I haven't been drunk or had Taco Bell, but would you ever just drink the sauce packets?
No. I know plenty of people who did. I never did that.
Yeah, me neither.
So, Bob.
Yeah, buddy.
You're the one who usually comes up with lists. Well, I have sort of a list for you.
Ooh, let's hear it.
I'm going to list a bunch of things, and you tell me, because I think all these things I'm going to list were more exciting than anything that happened on the ice. Are you ready?
Yes, I love this.
Everyone angry at cap circumvention. Mm-hmm. Elliot Friedman's hair.
Mm-hmm.
Ron McClain not asking Gary Bettman about the Blackhawks and the Tampa mayor. Those four storylines I found more interesting than most of what was going on the ice.
You can expand this. This is a good bit for your show. Are you on the air today?
Bob, this is all part of my opening thought. I wrote it last night.
Okay, yeah, it's good. I like this a lot. What else was more interesting? Were there any good commercials?
No, all the commercials are for like Quest Trade. God, no, there was really. Wait.
Okay, wait. You go and then I'll go. You go and I'll go.
Simon Cowell's face.
Oh my God. Okay, let's circle back to that because let me just quickly state that I'm finding it harder and harder to distinguish between brokerage commercials and dating apps. Like, I don't know if it's Quest Trade or am I trying to find a mortgage or a wife? I don't know. Okay, Simon Cowell's face. When you saw it the first time, did you go, oh no, or what's that? What was your reaction?
My reaction was, oh no, I'm scared. And don't you have money? Like, isn't the key to the high-end plastic surgery or whatever enhancements you're getting is that it's subtle? Like, that looks like the poorest woman on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
I don't understand not aging. Now, this may be because my hair went gray at 35, so...
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have much of a choice. But I don't understand the mania that says I've got to try and look 20 years younger than I really am. Isn't the best thing you can do try to look like I told you about how I wanted to do triathlons now because my goal is to be awesome at 60. Yeah. Like it's going to take me years and years to get there, but I have been shit for most of the times of my life. But if I work hard now, I can make every other 60-year-old look like crap compared to me when the time comes. Isn't that the real win? Defeating your peers in fair battle?
Yes. Yes. And I love it. It's, your motivation is less for your own health and more for shaming those around you. I appreciate
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I want conquest and disappointment.
There you go. Hey, with Simon Cowell, how much of that is vanity? How much of that is just insecurity? Because he must have asked for the deluxe edition.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Matt, I've spent a lot of time in show business with hosts, and there's a lot of pressure on them to look good. And Instagram hasn't made that any easier. If there was a cultural psychosis about trying to look young before, we've evolved past psychosis now. We're in some other, like, we're almost like in a, like a simulacrum. Sorry to use such a fancy word, but it's like, it's all just an illusion. Somehow the illusion became real. Sorry, I'm getting a lot of emails. This isn't my text. This is my Apple emails coming through on my other laptop.
I know, Bob. This is much quieter. Still, I can hear it, but much quieter.
Well, I've got all my notes on my other laptop. Wow, am I ever getting a lot of emails?
How many computers do you have?
It's my business.
Okay, so yeah, like of those four things I mentioned, Friedman's hair, Ron McClain not asking, Tampa mayor, everyone upset at cap circumvention. I felt those four things got more attention than everything except maybe the Kucherov story.
Which went away really quickly because he was amazing in game one. Everyone marveled, but because it The series would have been very different if the Habs would have won that game too. They probably outplayed Tampa. They certainly played them to a draw in a lot of ways, and it just didn't go their way. And had that been 1-1, it would have been a totally different series. But once it got to 2-0 and then 3-0, everything that happened after that was just trying to avoid shame, which they did, I think. I'm not sure the series was... It's really weird. It was almost... Remember when you were a kid and you would play with someone who's, like, smaller than you, and you'd hold their head, and they would try to punch you, but they couldn't reach your body because their arms were too short, and you're holding them at arm's length? That was like the Habs trying to hit Tampa. It just... It never looked like an actual fight.
No, it's why I picked Tampa in five. And I didn't think this series, it wasn't compelling because I never thought Montreal could win. And I've said it a billion times. It's that's less an attack on Montreal and more praise for Tampa. But Montreal scored 8 goals in the 5 games.
Yeah, Vasilevsky over the course of the entire playoffs let in under 2 goals a game. And I read, I can't remember how many series in a row, but in like final games, he's pitched shutouts. I think it was 5 series in a row, something crazy like that. Yeah. Anyway, there's another thought I have for the what's this got to do with the Leafs?
Yep.
And it's the Tyler Johnson thought. And this goes back to my other narrative that I think I really want to hammer, which is it's not the Leafs' time next year. Anything could happen. It could all come together and they could go on a run. It's not like it was Montreal's time this year. But if you're playing the odds, I don't think it's their year next year. But I do think that there's a window of 2 to 3 years where they could be the team that everybody wants them to be and feels like they're close to being now, but they probably aren't. And the name I want to throw out here is Tyler Johnston. When he first burst into the league, he was dynamic and young. He was undrafted. He was small. He was the inheritor to Marty Sand, the Wee. There were the triplets with Palat and Kucherov. And it was like, okay, this is the squad that's going to do it. And Tyler Johnson didn't turn out to be that guy. He did contribute to this run. And it's great to see him win. It's great to see him win a couple. I mean, it's still, it continues to be a great story on the ice. But what it made me think of is Leafs fans have a tendency to become obsessed with the roster they have in front of them. It's like, is this roster, as it's constructed, ready to win now? Because I need them to win now. Are they ready to do it now? And I would say, think about Tyler Johnson, who was signed to a big deal, and he was the talk of the town. And if he had been a Leaf, we'd go crazy if he wasn't one of the leading players on a cup-winning team, because he was supposed to be. And the second we set ourselves a narrative, we don't know how to move off of it. If Tavares is with the team, but he's a winger, or he's not one of the quote-unquote core four by the time they win, does anyone care?
No.
You know, it's like they won. However they win, like, this obsession with, are they close enough to win next year? Because I was so disappointed this year. Is understandable, but it's also totally not realistic. Like, Kucherov turned into a great player. Palat is a fine player. And Johnson was, you know, on waivers. And that was your triplets from, you know, 5-6 years ago. It doesn't always go the way you think it's going to go. And you have to be willing to constantly change. You know, Ben Bishop out, Vasilevsky in, Drouin out, Sergachev in. You have assets. And the best team is the one where it all comes together. And I think what Dubas has done really smartly is he's collected assets that have value. And the team is never out of contention while it has assets that have value. But I also think that we've seen that, like the triplets, the narrative we'd constructed for the Leafs didn't go the way we thought we were going to go. But that doesn't mean it can't go that way in the future. People just got to get rid of the idea that they're one piece away, one piece away. They're not one piece away. They're a bunch of pieces away, just like Tampa was a bunch of pieces away 4 years ago. But they won 2 in a row.
You're right. And I don't know if that would make Leaf fans feel good or bad, because when, you know, that original triplet group and they got to a Stanley Cup Finals and then lost. And then, you know, they then I think the next year they missed the playoffs because of injuries. But That means Toronto needs to find their Vasilevsky. That means the Leafs need to find their Braden Point, because Braden Point wasn't on that Cup team that lost back in like 2015 or 16, wherever it was. That means they got to find those guys and have them on reasonable contracts.
Yeah. And you know what, Matt? What you're saying is 100% true. And until they do that, they're going to need more luck than roster construction to become a to be able to beat a Tampa. Because Tampa does have that. And everybody wants to say, but we have this, and this has to be good enough. It's not. It's not good enough. You know how you know? They haven't gotten out of the first round. It's not good enough. But there are assets. And, you know, the reason why I cry out against Lou Lamoriello all the time is because there is no Braden Point in the pipeline. And what successful franchise doesn't have somebody who comes on an entry-level contract to really deliver? It's a cap thing. It's not magic. It's just you need somebody who's really good that doesn't make a lot of money. And you're right. Like, the Toronto needs a Vasilevsky. But where do we start this conversation? Toronto doesn't have one. So guess who's going to win in that series? Yep. These are the things Toronto needs. But I would say, remember Tyler Johnson. For everybody who's obsessed with, is Marner ready to win now? Is Nylander ready to win now? There were a lot of people who were like, is Tyler Johnson ready to win now? Well, you know what? He wasn't. But he did wind up on a contributor on a team that did win.
And the only pushbacks I would give, I'm not going to blame that all on Lou. I'm going to blame that on Brian Burke, Lou Lamoriello, and Kyle Dubas. And at least Tyler Johnson won some playoff rounds.
Agreed. And that's, you know, I would agree with that. It's not just Lou. And I would agree that at least they won some playoff rounds. But that's how far off the Leafs are. That narrative could change next year if all of a sudden they look amazing. But does anybody really think that? Does anybody really think that in the playoffs this team is suddenly going to be one of the top two or three teams in the East?
No.
Why would they be?
No. I have zero faith. I have zero faith in the Maple Leafs. Until they do it, I don't care if they go 82-0. And I hate that I'm at this point. They can go 82-0. I still will not believe they can win a playoff round until they do.
So, Cos, I don't really have anything else to say about hockey, and I've got a few other things I want to get to. Is there anything you want to talk about, like with hockey or with any other sports?
No, I'm just saying, Elliot, cut your hair. How about that?
I'm kind of growing to like it. You know, he's starting to develop like assassin hair. You know, like, but there's two kinds of movie assassins: the ones that are totally chaotic, and the ones that are super super organized. And he's got that like sort of Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men. Only a crazy man would look this way. Look, he must kill people.
He looks like someone Roger Moore would have fought against in the final 10 minutes.
Yeah, like mad, like supervillain.
Yeah, but not in shape. Daniel Craig is fighting him, supervillain. The kind that only Roger Moore would fight.
So, Matt, this is one of my secret tricks for how to, like, win in meetings.
Yeah.
I always wear a suit, and then I make my hair really big. Because people don't know what to make of me when I walk in the door. Like, is he a bum? Is he, like, who does, like, is he super organized? What is it?
Oh, my God, that's brilliant.
You've seen me do this 100 times.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't think you did that on purpose. I thought that was just you and your inability to get your shit together.
No, Matt, it's way more calculated than that. No, I stumbled into it. It wasn't like it didn't start as a plan. I just noticed over time that people always assumed that I had a good answer to things because I looked weird.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to do Jeff Pollock?
And then, yes.
And then I've got a question about Roger Federer for you.
Sure. That loser. Speaking of guys who doesn't lose. And speaking of a guy who wins in the boardroom and in the kitchen, it's our lawyer, Jeff Pollock, who is the sponsor of this podcast. And if you need, he's got a small legal company. So whenever you need legal help, swoop on in. Give them a call at 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. The website, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, two Fs, two Ls. Except you ain't going to have an L. You're going to have a W with jeffpollock.com.
That was a good one. Thank you. L's? That was good. Okay, Federer.
Improv.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. Before we get into my heartbreak over Roger Federer's loss at Wimbledon, is there a wine that's Swiss that's great and it's vintage and it is the blue chip gold standard by which all the other wines should be created? It's got to be Swiss.
Yeah, there's no real, like, there is, like, Swiss wine. There is some regions near, I forget the name of the giant lake there, that helps to regulate the temperature. But no, and no offense to Swiss wine, it's really more for the locals or for the super wine hipsters.
Okay, so what's the best Swiss wine, at least?
I honestly couldn't even tell you. I would have to go back. I'm trying to remember some of the local varietals. In the end, whatever their best thin-skinned red variety is what you're going to want. You're not going to want some thick thing like a Cabernet or a Merlot. You want to find their version of a Pinot, a Nebbiolo, or a Grenache.
Pick one, Matt. This is an improv. Chocolate?
Gamay. Swiss Gamay. Lot of red fruit.
Chocolate or cheese? The world can only keep one.
Chocolate.
Really? But cheese?
There's a lot of... Yeah,
cheese is so good, and it goes with wine.
I know, but I can get great cheese right here in Ontario and Quebec.
No, I'm not just talking Swiss cheese, Matt. I mean chocolate or cheese, all of it.
Oh, shit. Oh, sorry. You know what? I misheard you. Oh, boy. I'm still going to go chocolate because I was a sweet tooth before I was into wine.
Okay, but you're thinking of it only as a wine guy. Like, without cheese, what happens to pizza? Without cheese, what happens to nachos?
Bob, change my mind. You're right. Cheese. Nope, you're 100% right. Cheese. I can find plenty of other desserts, pastries, things like that. Nope, you're right. Cheese over chocolate. Sorry. Yep.
Yeah, I could be a vegan if you could eat cheese. I think I could give up meat before I could give up cheese. Cheese is the unsung hero of the food world. You know who's good at cheese?
Yeah.
Knows a lot about it is Jeff Pollock.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I think he's into like fancy foods and stuff, so he knows a lot of stuff about a lot of things. I think he's like a food guy.
I've been to his place for dinner a couple times with that green egg. I can confirm he is a food guy. You're going home full and you better take an Uber. And Bob... I'll just say that. I have never driven to Jeff's place. I could also be, I'm like you, like about the cheese thing. I could be a vegan as long as I could have cow, pork, duck, lamb, fish, shellfish. I could be a vegan.
So you're a vegan the way I'm a CFL fan.
There you go.
All right. Have you ever had an athlete that broke your heart? Because watching Roger lose the last set, the third set, 6-0 to some unknown dude. Well, I guess he's probably known in tennis circles, but I never heard of him before. I couldn't even watch it. And I know people said maybe that's his swan song at Wimbledon. Maybe I should have watched it, but I couldn't because it actually broke my heart. Have you ever had an athlete break your heart?
I felt bad for Jack Morris in the 92 playoffs because he was so good in the regular season, but he was kind of holding on. Postseason Jack Morris made me a little bummed out. Brett Favre, when he lost with the Vikings to the Saints and everyone was getting on his case for the bad interception, when they ignored all the fumbles and lost by members of the Minnesota Vikings and all the abuse his body took when we found out later there was bounty gate on him, I felt bad for him. So I don't know if those are heartbreaks, but those are moments I remember where I felt really bad for the athlete.
I never got quite to heartbreak with Clayton Kershaw, although it was trending in that direction because I admire him so much and the playoffs had just been so cruel to him. I felt really bad for you, Darvish, in that game 7 that he got shellacked by the Astros and then angry to find out that there was cheating. But Federer's different in the sense that sometimes an athlete captures not just what you love about sports, but what you love about people. And they become kind of aspirational. I guess Ali was that figure for a lot of people. Arthur Ashe was that figure for a lot of people. I don't know that Roger has the social conscience that those individuals do. You know, so it's a bit different. Martina Navratilova, I think, is like that. But just some people transcend sport and they become not just about winning, but how to win. And I hate Djokovic. You know, I've always begrudgingly loved Nadal, you know, because he's so much fun to watch. But I'm comfortable hating Djokovic, and it's his time now. And watching him succeed while my beloved Federer falls apart, I don't know if I can even watch the final. I'm just cheering for Shapovalov, but if he doesn't win, I'm just going to barf in a bucket.
Yeah, the best thing that could have happened to Djokovic was Federer losing, not necessarily because of the competition on the court, but because it would have represented the greatest home court advantage or disadvantage. If Federer was taken on Djokovic, that's like 95% of everyone cheering lustfully for Roger over the Joker.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because in some ways, this one good thing is it avoids me watching him lose to Djokovic. And then I would be like Ralph Wiggum with the choo-choo, choose me Valentine, when Lisa finally snaps on him. And you could like watch the exact moment my heart rips in two.
Yeah. Why? Like, there's an excellent chance that Djokovic is going to win. Then he'll be tied with Nadal and Federer for 20 Grand Slams. And so there's a good chance he could become number one. The tennis world seems really bummed out about that possibility.
Everybody's bummed out because Federer is almost like a paladin in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no weakness in his game. He is pure good. And Nadal is like so much fun, and he's a force of nature, and he plays with such muscular passion, you know, and it's just, he's so gutsy. And then there's something about Djokovic where he just, and maybe it's not fair, but it always feels like he's there to fuck up this good thing we have with everybody else.
I feel kind of bad for him because just, I can sense it. And I'm, you know, I'm not a hardcore tennis guy. I'm here for majors and Canadian, or Grand Slams, excuse me, and Canadians. I almost feel bad for, for Djokovic here, because no one's rooting for him. But the one guy, Bob, I'm not as big a fan of Nadal, not for his style of play, but just because he won so many of them on the clay surface. I'm like, okay, you know, you're an incredible, incredible tennis player, but I always got a raised eyebrow at you.
I'm with you. And that's why I loved him as a foil for Roger, because he always had the asterisk. So even if they did tie for total number of Grand Slam wins, I could always say, yeah, but the French Open, and then elevate Roger to the top. But Djokovic is destroying that argument because he's good on every surface. And head to head, he's been dominating these guys lately. Nah, it's just ugly. You know, this made me think, though, and one of the reasons I want to bring this up, not just in terms of heartbreak, but I wanted to talk about something I'm now calling sports nexus events. You've been watching Lucky, right?
Yeah.
So a nexus event is an event that disrupts the timeline that's supposed to be. It's some kind of like crazy variant thing that happens that disrupts the natural order of things, right? When in 2011, there was one shot that changed tennis history forever. It was in the semifinal in the fifth set of the US Open. And Roger was serving out for the win, and he had two match points. And he cooked a serve that absolutely 100% looked like he was going to be Djokovic's. Federer, Djokovic, fifth set, incredibly exciting, but it was going the way it was supposed to go, where Roger's dominance was eventually going to take over. And Djokovic winds up and cracks a return that honestly looked like he must have closed his eyes and just swung as hard as he could. And the ball and seared across the net and was this like outrageous laser of a winner. Federer never recovers. Djokovic wins the match. Afterwards, Federer was asked about it and he said, honestly, I don't understand that shot. It's like, it was like this shot that just wasn't supposed to happen. Nobody's supposed to swing like that, not on a match point. It made no sense. But people will look at that and say, from that point, the Federer-Djokovic rivalry flipped. Whereas Roger always had the upper hand before, all of a sudden Novak was taken over. And I now think of that moment as a tennis nexus event. I think we should talk about this. What are other nexus events in sports that you can think of? Moments that happened that shouldn't have happened and changed the entire course of history.
Okay. I got a good one. And I was scrambling my brain. Draymond Green punching LeBron in the balls.
Oh, that's such a good one. Imagine that never happens. What happens next if that punch never happens?
Yeah. Then Golden State wins that title. Does LeBron ever win one in Cleveland? Does Durant go to Golden State? Does Durant want to go to a team that just won the championship? I mean, who knows with that, happy galoot. But a lot. That one does a lot.
See, there's a difference between upsets and nexus events. Upsets are when the team you didn't expect to win does. And that's just sports. But a nexus event is when something happens that disrupts everything that was supposed to happen afterwards. Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson. That's not a boxing upset. That totally changed the way the heavyweight division worked, maybe forever. Think about September 23rd. I looked this up. 2001. 5:03 left in the fourth quarter of a Jets-Patriot game. Jets linebacker Mo Lewis slams into Patriots quarterback Drew Bledsoe along the right sideline at the old Foxborough Stadium. Bledsoe comes back for a series, throws one more pass, but then he's replaced by an unknown backup, Tom Brady. What happens if Mo Lewis misses that tackle?
Okay, on that one, I'm of two minds. One, that season goes completely different. The Rams win another Super Bowl. Kurt Warner wins. But Belichick is such a cold, ruthless fella. I think he was eyeing this Brady cat and was already thinking, my future is going to be tied with this younger, more mobile guy than with flat-footed Drew Bledsoe. I think eventually it would have been Brady. They would have won. They wouldn't have done as much winning. And I think it would have had a bigger impact on Kurt Warner than it did on the Pats.
Tom Curvers, the deal that doesn't bring Scott Niedermeyer to Toronto.
Mm.
There is a whole alternative timeline that could have been written if Niedermeyer becomes a Hall of Fame defenseman for Toronto. There are so many of these things. And again, it's the difference between an upset and something that disrupts the natural order of things. I think we should do one of these a week. I think that you and I should pick some of our favorite Nexus events and discuss what would have happened had this gone another way.
It's the Marvel comic, the What If comics.
That's exactly it. And What If is coming out. And I thought we should, and shout out to Lester McLean. He pitched this idea in a different form, like Lester of the Tim Hortons No, You Heard Shea Weber fame. He pitched it as a radio bit, but I said it's a little complicated to do for Drive.
Mm-hmm.
It requires a lot of moving parts. It's more of a documentary. But yeah. Okay, so Matt, I'm going to give you a challenge. Next week, come with a Nexus event that you feel changed sports.
And it won't be when Archie Manning saw Olivia from across the room at a bar.
Although that was pretty cataclysmic. Hey, you know what I realized? You mentioned Marvel. And we're talking about Loki. You know what I realized watching Loki? That Marvel has basically become WWE wrestling. Here's what I mean. They obviously have self-contained, self-referential universes where the stories intertwine and affect each other. But also, now that Marvel has TV, it's almost like wrestling in the sense that the TV shows are there to establish the characters and the narratives. And then the movies are like the pay-per-views where those narratives get paid off.
Yeah, that's it. Perfect. The movies are at WrestleMania. When Hulk Hogan was fighting Magnificent Morocco in a Saturday Night Main Event, and then suddenly King Kong Bundy came in and they roughed up Hogan. It set up King Kong Bundy versus Hulk Hogan in a WrestleMania.
So whatever happens now in the Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is being set up right now by Loki. So one, the movies aren't going to have to explain that backstory. It's going to be assumed that you have some of that going to the movie. But more importantly now, we have to go see the movie because the story has led us here. And I think this is going to be their model. I think they're going to be WWE from this point on.
That's a great analogy. That might be even better than our food and our fast food analogies for Leaf goaltenders or potential goaltenders.
I'm pretty excited about it. Okay, so let me ask you then, for the new phase, for phase whatever it is now of the Marvel movies, who is going to be the Hulk Hogan? Like, Iron Man was the last Hulk Hogan. He was the breadcrumbs that held it all together. Who feels like they could be the next wave's Hulk Hogan?
First thought is going to be Doctor Strange, partially because I think, like, the reason why Iron Man worked out so well was Robert Downey Jr. is a really good actor. So maybe it could be Benedict Cumberbatch or Batch or the fuck his name is. I can't say it. But he's a really good actor. And obviously, it looked like it was being set up for Black Panther, but just that horrible, horrible tragedy of cancer. So I might go with Doctor Strange.
Yeah, it's interesting because Chadwick Boseman felt like he was going to be the new one.
Yep.
And then obviously tragedy falls, as you say. And so Doctor Strange, certainly in the beginning part of this, feels like he's the most important character. Like, all the roads, whether it's through Scarlet Witch or through Loki, like, they all seem to be leading towards him. They obviously have a plan for the Eternals. I don't know what that is. I wonder, are they holding back to really answer that question until they get to Fantastic Four?
Don't bring up those two words.
What, Fantastic Four?
Yep.
Because of how shit the movies have been to this point?
Because how absolute horrors of movies, all three of them. None of them have even been a 4 out of 10.
You know, they got some cheap trick in the narrative to get Jessica Alba undressed in the first one and play the, I was invisible, now I'm naked and everyone can see me. And then they did it again in the second movie. Have you no shame? I'm interested in Anthony Mackie as Captain America, depending on how that plays out. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know how good he is. I know he's good. I don't know if he's Robert Downey Jr. good, but Captain America is such an iconic character.
Yeah, I don't think he is.
Yeah, I don't know either. You know, it's a tough one because, you know, Iron Man wasn't like one of the most important characters in the Marvel Universe, like in the comics. Like, he was, but he wasn't, you know? But in the movies, clearly, he ascended, and a lot of that was on the strength of Robert Downey Jr. But Marvel Comics, like, and Captain America go hand in hand. Also Spider-Man. But I kind of feel like Spider-Man has always been, he's always been an adjunct to stuff because he's an outsider.
Yes.
And I don't think you can make an outsider your main guy. You need an ideal, a living, breathing ideal, and Captain America is that.
It is. Anthony Mackie as an actor feels like Drew Holiday. Some games, he's going to be fantastic. Other games, he's shooting 4 of 18.
That's a really good analogy. I think I like Anthony Mackie more because I saw something in that Captain America series, like the Winter Soldier and the Falcon, that maybe... But I didn't love the Falcon as a character. He's kind of a minor character. By the way, quick bit of Marvel trivia. The character design of the Falcon, do you know what famous athlete they used as a model to design the way the Falcon looked?
The new one?
No, the old one, like in the 70s, when they actually created the character.
I'm feeling like it's either a painting by Da Vinci or an Olympic swimmer.
O.J. Simpson.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was a huge star at the time, and they kind of used him almost as a, like a model for how they thought the Falcon could look.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it's going to be the Fantastic Four, and I think whoever becomes Reed Richards, if he's good, will be the guy. Because I think Reed Richards, when they introduce those characters, is going to be responsible for fixing a lot of stuff. And you need your guy to be like an alpha, and Reed Richards is as smart as Tony Stark in the comics.
Yeah.
So it feels like he's going to be the guy who comes up with the plan, you know? In the same way, like, Tony Stark's the guy who comes up with the plan in Endgame.
Yeah, no, I know. It just feels like the Overlook Hotel. And I know we're playing the hits here. We mentioned Dungeons and Dragons. We're now on Marvel. We're going back to The Shining. I'm sure someone will mention Robert Shaw in a second. But they've tried. They had Miles Teller. They had a great cast for the last Fantastic Four movie. It was a piece of shit.
You know, a lot of those X-Men movies were bad, but that doesn't mean that Hugh Jackman wasn't a great Wolverine.
Yeah.
You know, and he became the breakout star. And they even started rewriting comic stories so that Wolverine was a bigger part of the movie version of them. Mm-hmm. Just because he was the star.
Yeah.
I think John Krasinski as Reed Richards could be a breakout star.
Ooh, look what you did there, Bob. That's a bingo.
Oh, man. By the way, I should plug the Apple show. George Stravopoulos interviewed Quentin Tarantino yesterday, and that's going to be on next week, I think, on Thursday.
So what? Okay, promote that again.
On next Thursday's show, or at least that's where we're planning to put it right now, is going to be Strombo in conversation with Quentin Tarantino. They had that conversation yesterday. It's being edited. It will roll out on Thursday. Next Thursday.
Damn.
Pretty cool, right?
Yes. I hope George told him, listen, asshole, you're not allowed to retire. You cannot retire. Every 18 months to 2 years, we demand the next Tarantino movie.
What will make you sadder? Eli Manning retiring or Quentin Tarantino retiring?
Tarantino. He had more hits.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Manning did beat the Patriots twice.
He certainly did, Bob.
I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah. Guess what? I'm not going to go down some Peyton Manning slander here. I'm not going to take the bait.
Look at you growing up. Little Maddie, all grown up. I feel like we're coming to the end of another exciting episode of the Macawin Cause podcast. We'll try to get together next week. Are you in town next week?
Probably later in the week. I got to do some babysitting for Josh and his wife Krista up at the cottage. So my schedule is a little in flux. I don't know. What is it about these breeders, Bob? They make life so difficult.
Really do. So true. So are you going to be like Mr. Momming it up there?
Oh, hell yeah. I'm going to fight with a vacuum cleaner. I'm going to get out of shape and play poker with the gals from the neighborhood. And I'm going to help as Amy with her ad campaign, Schooner Tuna.
What the hell is that? What are you talking about?
In Mr. Mom, his wife,
Right.
Terry that was a Garr. Deep pull.
Bob, it was a deep pull. Terry Garr, super underrated. We should do a whole pod on Terry Garr.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That'll be a way to get the kids in. Hey, everyone, check it out. Hey, kids, forget about that TikTok nonsense. Me and gray-haired Mackowitz are talking about Terry Garr. Terry Garr, come on in. Hi, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Mackowitz Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.